As a listener of this podcast, you know the devastating impact of narcissistic abuse, how it shatters your confidence, leaving you struggling in future relationships. But it doesn't need to be that way. Join me and experts Lisa Sunny and Rosanna Fay at the Strong and Unstoppable Retreat this October in beautiful Orlando, Florida. During this transformative four-day experience, you'll uncover the unconscious psychological blocks holding your recovery back. Through equine therapy, targeted workshops, and practical skill development, you'll uncover and overcome unconscious obstacles and reconnect with your inner strength. This retreat is specifically designed for women who are committed to their healing and ready to break free from the lingering effects of narcissistic abuse. Space is limited and spots are filling up, so don't miss this opportunity to invest in yourself and your future. Secure your spot by visiting wellnessrecoveryretreats.com. That's wellnessrecoveryretreats. Take your first step towards becoming strong and unstoppable today. Time and again, I have heard heartbreaking stories of victims who have not only suffered personal abuse, but also had their pets harmed as well. Lisa Sunny joins me today to discuss why pet abuse happens. And the self-help tip is some boundaries that you might want to consider if you're entertaining having a pet join your family in a less than ideal relationship situation. This is Breaking Free from Narcissistic Abuse, and I'm your host, Dr. Carrie Kerr McAvoy, a mental health specialist with over 20 years of counseling experience. Each week, we're going to take a deep dive into the dynamics of narcissistic abuse. As a listener-supported podcast, thank you for considering becoming a subscriber for less than the cost of a cup of coffee. In a few weeks, it's my sister's birthday, and I know you know she's passed away. And I've gotten to think about her and some of the stories that she shared. And I don't know if I've talked much about her or her life, but she just went from one abusive relationship to another. And one of her big concerns, because she always felt like she didn't have a lot in her life. She just felt like she had suffered so much loss that she had pets and her dogs meant the world to her. In particular, she had this Pomeranian that she just adored this animal, adored him. I think it was like a lap dog for her. And one of the things that she discovered is that when she wasn't around, I don't know if she found this out, but that her ex would kick the animal and it made it even more fearful, more frightened. And I have since discovered and even seen social media content that this is a common problem, that abusive people are often cruel to animals.
I've heard about it more than I've experienced it, but I had a dog. And it was my dog before the abusive relationships. I brought my dog in and he was actually outstanding to the dog. Absolutely loved him. He would put him in a backpack, carry him around, let him sleep in the bed. As time went on and the dog became an inconvenience to him, I started to really notice just neglect. So it wasn't overt abuse directed towards the dog, but it was just, you know, he would say, yeah, I'll take the dog out in the morning. I would leave for work. He wasn't home and he just wouldn't. And so the dog would then have a mistake on the carpet and he would be so angry and yell at the dog. Meanwhile, it's a dog. You didn't take it out. It hasn't gone out in 12 hours. It was the neglect, but it was also the shift. It was so strange to me that you let the dog in the bed. You loved this dog. And then all of a sudden, and he had all these nicknames for the dog, but in cute ways, but suddenly it was this nuisance and just completely neglected.
Another friend of mine, she had two, and the animals to her are super, super important. She never had her own children. She adopted a few, but she never had her own. But these animals to her were her children. That's all important to her. And when that relationship ended, he refused to give the animals up and he kept them. And in fact, sometimes he even will still get a hold of her and then give up like an update as a way to try to leverage more money out of her, like threatening the animals are going to be harmed or they're sick or they're hurting and that she somehow needs to cough up more money to support them. It's amazing to me how prevalent this is, that animals are mistreated. And it's not just dogs. And I know all three of our examples have been dogs, but I'm sure that it also happens, whether it's birds or it's cats or whatever pet per person has in their life. But so how do you understand this dynamic? What sense have you made of it?
I have figured that there's this kind of sense of rage in them, anger, in the way that you reference like dogs as our children and that, you know, that fur baby sort of feel. I wonder if there's a jealousy in the attention. certainly. But I also think that it's a method of control. It's a great way to emotionally blackmail your partner, right? If you go out with your friends, I'm going to hurt the dog, or I'm going to neglect the dog. If you have a business trip this weekend, I'm going to ignore the dog. I'm going to make, you know, some dogs have special food. And again, it's not just dogs, right? But the way that we care for our pets, they will use it against us and push us to comply with whatever it is that they want us to do. There's always this threat. So when you love your animal so much to leave it in their care, it can be really hard. Sometimes if you share an animal and you try to end the relationship, now you're looking at like split custody with an animal, which I can imagine seems crazy to certain people. But if you understand the love that some people have for their dogs, and I was certainly one of them, I would never have been open to sharing, because on one hand, I love dogs and they're absolutely family members. And on the flip side, I'm not going to continue to be abused for a dog. I'm going to take my dog. But I've seen some really outrageous battles. I've had clients where I see these custody schedules or having to prove who owns the dog for real, especially if you bought it together. So it can be really complicated to navigate. And I think that they prey on that.
I do too. I think they see the animal as an extension of yourself. I actually owned a dog for 8 years before she passed away. I loved Zoe. It was really clear to the whole world that Zoe was attached to me and that we were a pair. And whatever I did, Zoe wanted to be a part of. And I can see how a person who has that kind of mindset, who is resentful, sees the world competitively, feels that life's unfair, and then sees that you have this attachment to something that then reciprocates that love and attention and that concern back to you. I can see them then seeing that as part of you. And what better way to hurt you, especially since it's a vulnerable part? You're not in control of what happens when you're not around, as a great way to show revenge, to mistreat it in your absence, or even to mistreat it as a way to express their rage at you. Maybe they don't feel safe hitting you, but it's okay, though, to privately hit the dog or hit the cat. I can see how that would be a very easy extension or exchange that some people would make in that process.
Yeah.
What mine did, he made it clear when we were dating right off the bat. He let me know that he hated animals, he hated pets, and that I wasn't going to be allowed to have one. And it became kind of like a standing joke between us. He would look like at a robot, one of those robot dogs, and say, ha ha, you can have one of those, but you can't have a real thing. That's the closest you can get to it. So for him, he acted like it was something that I was being withheld, that I wasn't going to be allowed to have. Now, I didn't care, because I'm not in a stage of life where I wanted. And after losing Zoe, I wasn't really interested in doing that again. So it didn't bother me. But I thought it was interesting that even though we didn't have a pet, it was still an issue in the relationship. He still made it like an ongoing thing, you know?
Yeah. But,
and he then privately told me that he privately told me he'd killed animals, that was part of his history, that he'd killed cats in the past. I know.
Wow. Well, there's the sociopath.
I couldn't believe that he admitted that. I know. That's what, by the way, for those who are not aware of it, one of the old criterion for identifying psychopaths and sociopaths is they set fires as children. They have a pattern of setting fires. They tend to be late bedwetters. I know that there are other people who struggle with that as well. And then they also are cruel to animals. So you see that triad of behaviors. That's very concerning, because it suggests no empathy. And it also suggests sexual erotic behavior around the fires. That's kind of often a sexual erotic behavior. I don't know if you knew that.
I did.
But that's
wild. Absolutely wild.
Yeah. So that's kind of scary when I heard him admit that that was how he felt about that. His anger, his resentment, his hatred extended to the point of harming. It wasn't just that he disliked them and didn't want them around. He was willing to harm them. Have you coached somebody who's had this issue, and how did you walk them through this process of having an animal that they really love and knowing this animal may be at risk when they're not around? And obviously you can't have an animal with you 24/7. Probably can't take them to work with you, for example.
Yeah. I had a client that I'm thinking of specifically. So it was a dog in her case. And she was so terrified to leave the dog with him. It worked out, though, that his work hours were longer than hers. So it was so rare that he was actually alone with the dog. However, I was working with her at the tail end of her relationship, and our primary discussions were around exiting the relationship. And she knew that he was going to try to keep the dog, and he had actually bought the dog for her. So if you're looking at ownership papers, it's his dog. And she knew he didn't want the dog, didn't care about the dog, but would absolutely use the dog as a weapon to keep her, because he had previously said, you want to leave? Fine, get out. I'm keeping the dog. It built up this fear and dependency in her of thinking, if I leave, I'm going to have to leave my dog. Now, not that everybody has the time, money, and energy to go into a lengthy legal battle, but you can explore legal ways to obtain ownership of the dog. I wish it was called custody. It feels like, you know, calling a dog or saying that it's ownership.
It should be.
But regardless, because then it's like a child, right? But it comes down to property and ownership when it comes to animals, sadly. And so short of that as an option, I question, and again, I'm no lawyer, right? But I don't work with the police. This is not legal advice. But what if you just take the dog? I wondered if you were to sort of, let's say, ghost the relationship. One day you live there, the next day he comes home, you're gone, your stuff is gone, your dog is gone. That was luckily an option for her, and it's not for everyone, but it was, she just packed her belongings, left, and they dealt with the home ownership issues separately, but she just took the dog. He was irate, threatening to break in and take the dog, all kinds of crazy things. And she was absolutely terrified and had every reason to be, because technically she was lucky that he didn't pursue that legally. I think generally speaking, it's better advice to do things the legal way. And again, I say this and I know it's really hard. I'm a dog lover. I don't currently have one, but I'm my dog is my child kind of person. And I say there is no dog that is worth costing you your life or costing you $30,000 in legal fees to battle over. It's just, I so deeply understand the emotional connection, but you can't. I had a client years ago that had three dogs, and he was abusive to all three of the dogs, and she was constantly trying to protect them, and he was alone with them every so often, and the dogs would experience issues. One of her dogs actually had an issue with his legs, his back legs, because of abuse that he'd faced from her ex, or from her current partner, later ex, thankfully. And it was part of what she used to kind of inspire herself to get out of the relationship. Like, this is the person who's causing you emotional harm, financial harm. He's hurting your animals. And people who do that could hurt you. I mean, abuse is progressive. That's something key that we all need to remember, is that, you know, when they're punching walls or kicking your cat, you have a real potential to be next, because the demonstration of violence is not just the act of violence in and of itself. It's meant to create fear. It's meant to show you could be next. So it's supposed to heighten your fear. And it often does.
Right. No, I agree. I think that's what I've seen as well, is that the sad piece about all of this is that often you have to sort of mourn the loss of the relationship with the animal. I'm thinking back to my friend. She did lose those two pets. She never did see them again. I don't know if they've survived and what their health is like. I think he still sometimes reports on them and tortures her with the updates on them, but she's had to mentally to herself say, I have to imagine that they're gone. I have to, in my head, picture them as deceased, because that's the only way that I can cope. She now has two new animals. In fact, they were rescue animals that came into her life, and she sort of sees them as a godsend. But, and I know that's not easy. I know that, in fact, this has got me to thinking, your story was that, back to Zoe. Zoe was struck as a pup by a car in an accident. Her growth plate was affected. And so years later, she started limping and was losing that joint because of that injury. So I had surgery, spent the long dollar and had it corrected. And unfortunately, her recovery coincided with a trip that I had to make, and I put her care with somebody else. And I told this person who happened to stay at my house, she can't do the stairs. Don't allow her to do the stairs. Well, this person didn't take me serious and let her run the stairs, and it undid the surgery. So ultimately, Zoe passed away from kidney failure because she needed pain meds because the surgery failed. It cost her her life. This error was costly. I don't hold that person responsible. I know they just didn't understand.
Right.
They should have, but they didn't. I mean, when it's not your animal and it's not your money, you just don't have the same kind of investment. But if this was somebody that I loved, who had walked through this with me, who understood what this meant to me, and then did that behavior, it would have had even more significance to me than this did. This was one of those, I should have figured, I should have taken it on. I shouldn't have been gone, but it wasn't the same because this person didn't live that life and she didn't see the money being spent and she didn't understand that the surgical instructions were that rigid. That was on me, not on her. But when it's a loved one who does this, and I know this is what people go through, that takes it to a whole nother level. This is like an intentional effort to really screw you, really to say fuck you in a big way. I know this is something that's something super sensitive for a lot of people. I know, thank goodness, it wasn't a vulnerability of mine because I didn't have animals at the time. But I even think, for example, and I know we're not really talking about it, but this can show up with your stepchildren, your children, who they're now their stepchildren, or how you deal with the in-laws, or anything that's kind of instrumentally important to you ends up being a place of there's neglect. It opens you up for abuse. It opens you up to feel really vulnerable where you feel that you have to like watch yourself. You maybe can't let down or let this be something that they have access to. It just really causes a lot of boundary concerns, a lot of boundary concerns.
Yeah. It removes some of that feeling of freedom. You know, I remember the inconvenience of having a dog, which even if you love your dog, I mean, there's some inconveniences to having them. Mm-hmm. But I was always very cautious of the inconveniences of having the dog to him, because that's when he would get really angry. He would yell at the dog, right, if the dog made a mistake, but he would also yell at me. And then it became your dog did something, when at that point, I know it was mine originally, but we were together for so long, it was ours. But he would yell and he would take it out on everything, right? And like, you clean it up. And then hours later, right? The mistake happened in the morning. I'm already at work. You leave it there for me for 8 hours, 10 hours, waiting for me to come home. And that was my punishment for him not taking the dog out. It's wild. But it's the manipulation and the double standard and just how their twisted brains work, that they can punish you for mistakes that they make, because it's your fault that we have a dog. So therefore, it's your fault that the mistake happened.
What kind of boundaries should people be thinking about having when it comes to having somebody new in their life and they are a pet owner? I know I'm throwing this out there and you haven't any chance to think about this, but one that comes to my mind is to realize that when you bring someone new into your life, or even maybe they introduce a pet to you, maybe like you said, you gave some scenarios where the pet was given as a gift. But if you're in a relationship with somebody that maybe you don't know very well, or you're already recognizing there's some difficulties here, this is a challenging person and maybe a little bit of an antagonistic person, I think it's really important to be aware that boundaries with your animal may become an issue, and to think through what some of those boundaries, like, do you ever want them alone with the animal? Maybe you need to set up some kind of a pet sitter situation to where you don't leave them with this individual ever. But I just think thinking some of these things through might help avoid this. Mm-hmm.
I think the acknowledgement of how much work it is to have any pet and what that would look like in the context of a relationship dissolving, even if you're buying the dog together, whether you bring it from a previous relationship, any pets. How are you going to co-manage that? Is this a person that is participative? Do they help? Is it collectively yours? Are they viewing it as just yours? How do they treat animals in general? Do they like animals? Because it's interesting. I've lived with someone who had cats. I'm not a fan of cats. Now, I understand a lot of people are. I don't hate cats. I do not choose to own a cat, but I still had to participate. Sometimes I had to feed the cat, or I have to admit I drew the line of the litter box, but we had to have that conversation. Like, what's my role going to be with having animals? So you have to know that, you know, if someone straight up tells you, like, I don't want this dog, you have to ask yourself how they're going to treat it or view it during your relationship. How are you going to do it together? I mean, we joke that dogs are like kids, but kids are harder and certainly much more work, and There's a work that goes into it. So how are you going to co-manage that together is something you have to consider.
I think the other error we make in this arena is that we assume that people are well-meaning and good-intended, mm-hmm. and that we can trust them to make loving, supportive, compassionate decisions around things that have to do with us. We assume they'll stay out of our stuff. We assume they won't throw things or destroy things on us. We assume they're going to treat our animals well. We need to not assume that. Just because someone says they love you or that they're going to be in a relationship with you doesn't mean they need to then take on everything that's related to you. I think for me, I tended to be way too naive about that. And I tended to give people the benefit of the doubt that if I knew that I was going to be a straight up kind person around their stuff, I assumed they would do the same. They would show the same generosity as I would. But that's really a grave error, a really serious error.
Yeah, we're going in blind. No assumptions.
Yeah, we do.
Anything we've learned.
Yeah. I think it's so important. I love the suggestion you're making. It really think through these boundaries. Who's going to do the care? Whose money is being spent? Is this a person who even is honest about how they feel about those decisions? How many times have you and I've met people who say, sure, no problem. And then you find out later, they didn't mean that at all. It was a huge problem. And they're very resentful and they're keeping track of all of that. They may have a spreadsheet of all the expenses that have been spent on this, whatever it is, the hobby, animal, whatever it is. But I think it's really important for us not to make assumptions, to have really open, candid conversations about these things.
Yep.
I'm thinking back to my sister. I think that to know that having a pets is super important to you, and for some people, it is sort of a hill they're willing to die on, frankly. It's a critical part of their life. For some, even, it's a comfort animal. Mm. It's something they see essential as their mental health well-being. I think it's critical that when we do that, when we have those types of relationships with things like pets, for us to understand that there comes a risk, a serious risk. Like my sister's situation is that I just don't think she really factored that in, that how well that was going to work, that it wasn't going to work well, that she would basically have to keep this animal with her all the time in order for it to work well.
Yeah,
it was heartbreaking because it was one of those catch-22 situations where she just was losing in both directions. Mm-hmm.
In these abusive relationships, the way that an abuser will like, oh, I forgot to feed the dog, I forgot to walk the dog, or I'm not paying for that, or we're wasting so much money on this flipping cat. There's always an opportunity for them to kind of complain, blame you for it. It can cause a lot of arguments. I mean, even in the healthiest of relationships, some of these external factors can cause issues. We love the dog, but it needs a $4,000 surgery. Are we really doing this? Those are conversations you need to have.
Yeah.
Now, the difficulty is, of course, with an abuser is that they may say things and then not follow through. So my own story, when we met, he said, I'm not really into pets. He's never had a pet, but he was so kind to my dog. So kind. Like he love bombed the dog. Truly. My dog wasn't allowed on the couch or the bed.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden he was sleeping in our bed under the covers. He was so loved. And then he wasn't.
And we don't factor that in, do we? I saw that. I saw that love bombing was happening. My ex was doing it with my sons.
Oh, really?
And I had a sneaking suspicion because one of them was living with me at the time that if this was to continue, it wouldn't stay this nice. My gut was just saying, be careful here. This is going to be a very dangerous, especially since they're two grown men in the same household. This is not going to go well.
I think I'm lucky I didn't have that experience.
I just recently was talking to him about it, that because he knew him, he loved him, he cared about him, had feelings for him. It's important for us to have that same kind of critical awareness when it comes to things like our animals, our pets, the things that mean a lot to us, who's in our life, who's coming along with us in this new relationship. And just because somebody seems so wonderful up front does not mean it's going to stay wonderful down the road. In fact, usually the places that, as a psychologist, when I'd see people come into the office, the places that they said were some of the best spots in the beginning often end up being the worst spots at the end.
So true.
And I was thinking about your example. Yeah. That he didn't treat your animal, your dog well at all.
We rehomed him.
Did you?
He's still alive, but I rehomed him. So I planned to rehome him before a trip that we took, and they babysat the dog on that trip. And then after the trip, we actually rehomed him. And funnily enough, about a week before that was an assault on me. And it was sort of, just sort of glossing over that major detail. But after that assault, it was like, I need to rehome the dog. Things are getting so much worse. I need to alleviate some stress in the house. Maybe this is causing it. We had two little kids. Like it was really, really hard. So it was a hard decision, but I had to give up my dog, who I would still have if I hadn't rehomed him. I don't regret rehoming him because he went to a wonderful family. We know the family, but I couldn't handle it. It was too much going on for me. You know, I was doing everything myself.
Yeah. So. Yeah. In the podcast extra, you and I are going to jump over and do that together. But I want to talk about how do you play a sophisticated game at the end to where handling the toxic person's threats and intimidation around the animal? How can you manage that so you're less at risk? What are some strategies? I think you and I can come up with some ideas that they could possibly think through is how to handle this really tricky situation. So if you're in a position where you feel like your partner is going to use your relationship or use your animal or even your animal's health against you, then be sure to join us for the podcast extra because we're going to talk about some strategies that you could possibly consider as a way to manage this. So thank you so much for talking about this. I know it's something that we're not personally dealing with. I know I didn't deal with in my relationship, but I know it's such a common problem and a heartbreaking problem. Well, that's a wrap for this week's episode. Are you following me on TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube? Find me at Carrie McAvoy, PhD. And whether you're in, consider leaving, or have left a narcissistic relationship, find community support at my Toxic Free Relationship Club. You can learn about this resource as well as others at CarrieMcAvoyPhD.com. And I'll see you back here next week.